It's the Book of the Week.
And it's that time of the week again. Yes, it's Portsmouth Authors Collective with myself and Laurie will be back this week. And we also have CJ Powell, our author, our guest author of the week. Chris writes fun and unusual sci-fi fantasy, mostly set in the real world. He also plays bass in a wedding band and regularly travels the world to rock the party. How wonderful. But when he's not doing that, he's reading, gaming, or trying to catch up on sleep. And his favourite authors include Terry Pratchett, Blake Crouch, and Jeff Vandermeer. Now, his book is called I Eat Mushrooms for Breakfast, so I'm trying to conjure up what that's all about. And that's why Chris is in to explain that for me. But I will give you a bit of blurb on the book. Mark, I think is his main character, just wants to be a hero, a star sailor, jetting across the galaxy, saving colonists, and giving aliens the what for. Well, all he needs is a little bit of cash to cover the training. So when he's offered the biggest score of his life, he knows he has to take it. Welcome back to Victory, Chris.
Hiya, how's it going?
Oh, good. Now I've got the mic channels up. We're all good, man.
Yeah,
how are you?
Good. I'm great, thank you. Yeah.
It's nice to have you back again.
So, yeah, it's nice to be back.
Tell us a bit more about your book and this main character, Mark.
Okay, so Mark is a space pirate, and he basically has these dreams of being a wealthy space hero, in a way, called a star sailor.
Right.
But he hasn't got any money, so he can't get all the good technology to become a hero, so he decides to rob a space yacht. There's a lot of space involved.
Okay, where did the inspiration come from?
Basically, there's this fungus called cordyceps, which gets in an insect's brain and makes it climb all the way to the top of a tree, and that's how it spreads its spores, by being up really high. But it uses the insect's body to get really high, and then it kind of explodes and sends spores all over the place. And I had this idea that what if the cordyceps could infect people and make them do weird things to try and spread its spores. I basically set that in space on an alien planet, so when the space pirates end up on the alien planet, some of them might get infected by this thing and weird stuff.
Okay, so I can see now with the spores and that, and the title now, Eat Mushrooms for Breakfast. Do you like mushrooms?
Weirdly, I think you asked this about the cats because, well, I don't really like cats.
I remember.
And yeah. That's a bit of inspiration from the last time, but I don't necessarily like mushrooms for breakfast. I like hunting them and finding them in the forests, and I like the idea behind them. So I read this book called Entangled Life, which is all about mushrooms and how they affect the whole way the world works. Well, not mushrooms, but fungus in general.
How far are we away in our DNA from mushrooms?
I don't know, actually. Apparently, they're not animals and they're not plants, but they're somewhere in between. I've never actually checked.
Okay, so is there any subtext in the book? Does it have a message?
A lot of it, I was reading lots of books about happiness and how to become most sort of the most happy you can be in your life. And the idea was that if you limit your desires and your wants and needs, you're more likely to be more happy. So there's this guy who's poor and he's got no money and he wants to become a superhero, basically, so that he can become rich and improve his life. But his friend is telling him, well, actually, if you're not happy now with nothing, you'll probably never be happy with stuff. And he starts to find out, as the people that he robs on the space yacht, who are really, really wealthy, aren't happy necessarily either. It's about happiness and about how finding your place in the universe.
I'm kind of sensing a little bit of psychology here or something.
Yeah, I did a psychology A level, and my dad, he did a psychology degree, and he was a sales trainer, and he teaches people a lot about their wants and their needs and how to be happy in your life.
I love the idea. I love the thought of having less is more. I love that.
Yeah, it is good to set goals, but it's also good to sort of think about the things that you've got now and the moments that you live in now that kind of make you happy, rather than dreaming for something better and wasting the now.
Yeah, I get that. But the reality is you have a busy life by the sounds of it.
Yeah, I've got a four-year-old, which is basically all my time gone. And I play in a wedding band and I do writing and I run a band agency. Yeah, so I've got a lot of stuff on. I don't really want for more than that.
Yeah, happiness is nothing to do with material things, is it, at all?
No, not at all. And that's kind of a bit about what I wanted to talk about with the book.
Yeah, and that's kind of in there and self-explanatory through the reading, yeah?
Maybe.
Is that the wrong terminology?
It might be quite subtle subtext, but that was the idea behind a lot of it. But I kind of hope people would find that.
Cool. How long have you been writing now?
7 years, maybe.
Have you got any tips for other people to get them started out?
I think the way I kind of think about it is maybe in 5 years I'll be I'll be okay at writing. So it doesn't necessarily matter if you're bad now. Just kind of set a time where you want to be better for and just write towards that, rather than thinking, oh, what I'm writing now is terrible. Just think, nah, it'd be fine.
Interesting. I mean, as you know, I sort of come from the music world, certainly more than the writing world in terms of writing a book. Where I'm trying to come from here is, when do you think something is complete?
I don't know. There's that thing, isn't there, where your next song is your best song. So sometimes you just have to complete the thing you're on.
To get to the next one.
To get to the next one.
That's a good philosophy, yeah.
Yeah, I think it's the same with writing. It might be that the book you're writing now, actually no one wants to read. But, I mean, yeah, that's what happened with my first book. I think I've sold about 100 copies, but then my second book, I sold a few more copies.
A lot of that's in the marketing, though, isn't it? There's not really a reflection on your writing.
No, but I think it is the same with music as well. You might have like a song that people, if they actually sat down and listened to it, but you can't.
I know what you're trying to say. So when I ran a recording studio, I reckon I recorded dozens of number one hits that never got released.
Oh yeah, definitely. And I don't know, with the book, you have a theme and you have a title and you have a cover, and if it doesn't appeal to anybody, it doesn't matter what the book is. But then I've written a sci-fi book about mushrooms eating people for breakfast. And I've written a book about cats, and I thought, oh, no one's going to read this cat book. But actually, more people have read the cat book than any of my other books put together, and I've got 4 other books. But just the cat thing appealed to people.
Yeah, I suppose there's a lot of cat people out there.
There's a lot of cat people out there.
And you're not one.
No.
I remember.
Not the biggest cat person.
So when you sit down to write, how much preparation have you done other than what's in your mind? Have you got any notes around you and things like that?
Usually when I sit down to write, I've got a rough idea, and I write it and usually figure out that's not right. So that's what I tend to do, is I write the whole book and I find out, oh, that's probably not what happens then. And then I have to go back and then write the whole book again. And then it's like, oh, okay, that's closer to what happened. And then I'll go and do a bit of thinking rather than waste my time writing another book.
Yeah, that's interesting. So you write the book, then you rewrite it. Do you rewrite it whilst reading it at the same time? So it's like an edit more than a rewrite.
I usually read it on my Kindle and make loads of notes. And then I go back and do the notes. And usually it's like, this chapter is rubbish. Take it out. Write something else.
Yeah. Going back to what I was saying earlier about, you know, whether a book sells or a song sells, it's all about the marketing, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. And the marketing is the most unpleasant part.
Well, I think it's the toughest part and potentially the most expensive part to get it right.
Yes, absolutely. But I find a lot of marketing these days is on social media, and I just don't like social media.
Yeah, it's become a bit of a necessity, hasn't it? And not everybody likes doing it.
No, and I also find probably authors are a little more introverted than most people. That's why we can spend hours on our own in a room writing, and that's social media isn't conducive to that sort of introvert.
Sure. Yeah. No. Absolutely. Yeah. Putting yourself out there.
Yeah. This is terrifying.
We'll skirt around that kind of marketing, but we'll do some now. Where can somebody get a copy of your book?
You can order it from, I think you can order all of my books, including I Eat Mushrooms for Breakfast, from Pigeon Books in Portsmouth. You just have to order it in. Or you can buy it from Amazon if you've got a Kindle.
Encourage you to buy local if you can.
Oh, yeah, definitely buy local. There are a number of other bookshops where I'm sure you can order it in around Portsmouth, but Amazon if you've got a Kindle.
Sounds like a book that I think many people I know would enjoy. Yeah, maybe I'll get to read that. I'm piling it on top, or sorry, underneath my TBR list.
Oh no, is it big? Big TBR.
What's next for you then, Chris?
So I'm writing the sequel to The Cat's Book at the moment. I'm about 45,000 words into that, and I don't know what's going to happen next. There's a murder.
Right.
There's cats lost in the woods.
So do you literally sit down, start typing, and you hope to get in the zone and it just flows?
Yeah, hope to get in the zone. But it doesn't always happen. And then my daughter will come in and say, Daddy, can we play dominoes? And then everything's lost and I have to start again the next day.
I get that, yeah. Chris, as always, it's been a pleasure having you in. I really wish you well with your book.
Thank you.
Is there anything else you want to say?
Probably not.
Okay. You've been great, mate. Best of luck with the book.
And, thank you.
Okay, so thanks to Chris. We have got a song ready for Chris, and it's Don't Worry, Be Happy. And he does talk with a smile on his face, which is wonderful. It's a Bobby McFerrin song, and here it is. And we'll be back after this with Laurie Westron for part two of Portsmouth Authors Collective. Here's a little... Be happy. And back with part two of Portsmouth Authors Collective with myself and back with Laurie Westron. Laurie, how are you doing?
I'm good, Bob.
So you were a bit poorly last week.
Yeah, but, you know, just a bit of a bad throat is all.
I was very grateful that you didn't bring it in. And it was nice to have Jackie in anyway. Nice for a change, I suppose. Mm-hmm. Did you miss doing it?
Yes, I did.
You had a smile on your face then, and I think you're really saying I did enjoy the break.
I must admit I did enjoy the break. Yeah, yes, you're correct.
Yeah, well, you've been very, very duty bound here, putting a lot of effort to get here. It's not easy, is it? You come all that way on your bike, usually loaded with books or something, but no, it's nice to have you back.
Thank you.
So, Laurie, following on from last week, we had Dave Flint in to interview, and I thought we could talk a bit more about coming to writing later in life and the value of belonging to a writing community. I think that's something that touches your heart a little bit.
Well, yeah, I think I'm all about encouraging people to tell their stories, to, set that pen down on the paper and start, telling the stories they want to tell.
Get the rollerball rolling.
And I like that, the rollerball rolling. And yeah, and a lot of people don't find the time to be able to do that until they've retired, such as Dave last week. And I think that's really common. We've had, a number of people who have never written as a younger person, but they get to retirement and those ideas that have been percolating in their heads for a while and they want to get them down.
Yeah, and do you feel that you can inspire people to do that? Is that something we can do today?
Well, I hope so. I don't know about me personally, but yeah.
The reason I say that, you didn't start writing. You've written all your life, but you didn't launch a book until later in life.
Well, I didn't start, publishing until later, but yeah, I've always written.
And let's look at Pete Adams, who's a prolific serial writer, didn't start writing till he retired, and many others that we've spoken to before.
Oh yeah, I think it's quite common, and so I'm all for encouraging that, but also for helping people to get involved in a writing community, because I think we learn from other people, and as Chris has just said, writers are sometimes, quite isolated. We like our little solitude that will allow us to have time to write. But I think that having a community of people that we can get advice from, that we can share our work with, that we can get feedback from is really important.
And I suppose bigger than all of that is encouragement to go and do it.
Yes. And, and it depends on what a person's goals are. My goals were always to publish, but that's not necessarily true for everyone. But I think if you are serious about wanting to get your books read by other people, you need to make sure that they're as strong and polished as can be. And that's why I say that being part of a writing community and involved in that sort of seeking feedback, seeking to get your book as polished and as strong as possible.
Oh, I'm sure there's a lot of people out there that when they start writing, they're shy to get anyone else to read the book. And we have talked about this before, to read someone's manuscript and give them some feedback on it. And as you've said before, that's fine. Don't let it be your wife, husband, mum or dad. Get somebody outside of your group that are going to be giving you honest feedback. And that is important, isn't it?
That's important. And it's also important that you trust the person giving the feedback. So that person needs to know what they're talking about, for one thing.
That's a good point.
And also that person is going to treat your work with respect. So not somebody who's going to tear it to shreds and, not help you to develop. That's what feedback is all about. It's about helping the other person to develop their story.
Absolutely. I refer back to the music world quite regularly, and I hope that doesn't put any of you authors off out there, but that's all I can talk about, because I've written in the songwriting context. And sometimes we write a song and we know it's not going to get anywhere other than in our ears, the, you know, the songwriters or the band that performs it. And often we write it just another one to go on the shelf. Are there authors like that?
Oh, yeah. I think authors write a lot of things that never see the light of day. And that's all about, you know, practicing your skills. You can't just sit down and write a book and expect it to be a success. You have to, you know, exercise that writing muscle. And one way of doing that is by writing things that aren't going to go anywhere.
Would you say in writing that there's definitely the use it or lose it scenario?
I mean, we can certainly get rusty, but I don't think it ever goes away. I think that writers, one of the things that I think writers have is an appreciation for words, and that doesn't go away. And I think that putting words down on paper and putting them in the best order, that can get rusty.
Okay,
and that's why it's important to, you know, to write, to, like I say, exercise that ability.
I think anything in the arts, you know, you can go rusty if you don't keep it up. I used to draw a lot as a kid. I don't think I could draw a straight line anymore. Seriously. And I used to draw, you know, intricate trees and faces and animals, and I can see some of the pictures in my mind now that I had done. I couldn't do that anymore.
Well, yeah, it does. It's like any skill. It takes practice. And I think that the ability is still there. It's just that, you know, we all have priorities, and sometimes we have to set things aside and focus on something else for a while.
I think where I'm leading to here is generally in the arts, the subconscious mind is a big, powerful thing. And in other words, if you're drawing, you're not necessarily drawing with anything other than going blank in your brain and letting the pen do the work. And does that happen with putting words together?
Oh, yeah, it can do. But, you know, when you then come out of that zone, you know, because, yeah, when the words are flowing, that's a magical feeling.
Oh, gosh, yeah.
But then when you come out of that, you need to be able to look at what you've written with an objective eye and, you know, be able to analyze what is good, what is not so good, and to go from there. I think very few people ever write one draft and it's perfect.
Yeah, I think it's, you've got to be prepared to be brutal, like a surgeon with a scalpel taking away things and then just disregard it and you know, throw stuff away.
Yeah, well, you know, I tell people never to throw stuff away, as in, you know, deleting it forever from your computer, but there are things that will get caught and stuck in a file, and maybe they are things that will fit in someplace else, or maybe there's a seed of something that is worth saving about that material that has been cut.
Sure. So a little bit of a roundup of what we've been talking about. Don't be shy to start writing regardless of your age.
Absolutely. And, you know, there are lots of people out there who are willing to help, willing to encourage people. I've spoken before about the Portsmouth Writers Hub. And of course, you know, here in PAC, we've got a lot of people with a lot of experience. I think, yeah, finding a small group of people you can trust and who will, you know, guide a person, I think that's essential.
Absolutely, Laurie. Brilliant. And thanks for coming in again, and glad you got well. And what you got coming up for PAC over the next few weeks or months even?
Oh, well, let's see. We've got a market coming up in Summerstown at the end of the month. I think it's the 27th of July. Summersfest. It sounds a lot of fun. That there's going to be a lot of things going on, lots of activities and outdoor cinema, music, food, books, and lots of other things. So yeah, I think that will be quite an exciting market.
Brilliant. Okay, look forward to you coming back in next week and bringing your guest author that you always like to keep a little bit incognito.
Oh yes.
See you then.
See you, Bob.